before we kick off today's episode, I got something that could save you a ton of time this season. If you're a grassroots coach trying to juggle work, life, and soccer, Soccer Coach Weekly is an absolute game changer. Since 2006, they have been trusted by coaches from all over the world, delivering fun, ready-to-go drills that keep players focused, learning, and loving the game, even when you're short on time. And here's the best part. Chat by the Pitch listeners get 50% off a full year of premium access. Just click the link in show notes and use the promo code EN50 at checkout. That's EN50 for half off. Plan fast, coach smart, Soccer Coach Weekly.
Ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of Team Player's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TEAMPLAYR.US. And come give Team Player a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order.
Hello and welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. I'm not going to say too much about this person that I have on. It's Keen Barclay. I give him a lot of props. I will have to say, if you don't know who he is, go look him up, Google him, spend time finding out who he is, because he has a lot of information to share. His opinions are pretty accurate, in my opinion, and the advice he has given me as a parent has been instrumental in me learning. That's the key part, learning, not practicing. And as a parent, this is someone I look up to. As a podcaster, this is someone I look up to. And when I was coaching, this is someone who I definitely looked up to. So let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
I'm Keen Barclay, and I'm the a head women's soccer coach at Columbia State Community College in Columbia, Tennessee. And then I'm the director of coaching at Clarksville Soccer Club in Tennessee. So those are my two roles now.
For me personally, this is a big deal. For anyone listening, this man right here is the podcast I found during COVID that inspired me for mine. And after chatting with him one day, it was, I'm going to do this. And I found you on Twitter, messaged you on Twitter, and we started talking from there. And the rest is history for this podcast. For me personally, we had a 45 minute conversation. You're going from the college to Clarksville. And I think about 2 weeks later, I reached out to a family friend and asked if they would do an interview with me. And the rest is history for me. So this is a big deal for me because you started it all. And I love your podcast. I've listened to it probably 3 times through now. If you haven't heard of it, I'm going to give it a pitch right now. It's called Down the Tunnel with Keen Barclay, and you should listen to it. If you see any similarities from my podcast to his, you know why now. Now, your soccer journey started where?
Originally from Fayetteville, Arkansas. That's where I was born. It's where I grew up. I just kind of started playing because my brother played, who's older than me. And, you know, young, the advantage, right? We always start a little bit earlier than what the older siblings do. But yeah, I just started playing rec in Arkansas and really stopped. So from years old to however old I'm now, I just never stopped.
That's awesome. So did you come up through the traditional club world? Did you come up through other avenues? Was it similar to how it is today? I honestly don't know because I don't have a soccer background. Everywhere else has been different throughout the country, but I know that DFW has been a heavy club scene for decades.
I think the youth soccer landscape is certainly different now than it was 35 years ago, you know, whenever I started playing. We don't have the structure we do now, but when the path is traditional in the sense that it is now, have these massive clubs and they start playing at 7 years old, come up through the gigantic benefit, come leaps and bounds in 35 years, I'd say, coaching education in the United States. I think my experiences in soccer are certainly different than a lot of others just because I moved so much as well. Like my family, and that would have been around, gosh, maybe 19, I think would have been like the Ireland, and then was in Bolivia in 93. Those trips when I was in Ireland, got to go to some camps, and that was when I first met Mick McCarthy. Still playing for the national team. He might have been captaining the national team. So that's when I first met with him and came career too. But then when we were in Bolivia, the Tawichi Academy, which is in Santa Cruz, Bolivia. So I think we were the only American. I think that year we were in Soccer America, the old magazine. This is obviously before internet, for being the first non-Bolivians in that academy. So that was a as well. And my family moved again. We were in Scotland So, yeah, I just moved around so much to see just the culture, even just from a footballing sense, in Ireland to Bolivia to Scotland. That was, I think, pretty impactful in terms of how I saw the game. And I think it gave me an advantage in terms of interacting with all the different cultural pieces and just to have such a vast array of, I think it certainly influenced me and impacted me tremendously between the ages of, I don't know, maybe 8 to 13, to have kind of a pretty vast international experience. So that's how I got started. So young age, wide array of experiences.
Did you play beyond high school? Did you go off to college? And did you play at amateur or professional level after the younger years?
Yeah, so amateur level. So after high school, I went to Scotland and then played for a university in Scotland, played for a university, and then had an opportunity to play with a couple of what I would consider amateur teams, which would be Carnoustie, Panmure, and just two teams that kind of play in the Fife League in Scotland while I was over there, and then came back and then went to Oakton Community College for a semester and then played there and then transferred to Indiana University, Indianapolis, formerly IUPUI, but now it's IU Indy. And then that's where I played and finished up. And then I went, just quick timeline, right? So then after that, then I went back to England. And then that was when I had an opportunity to do some stuff at West Ham United. And then did some stuff with Wolves when Mick McCarthy was the manager at Wolves. Then came back to the US And that was when I started my college coaching experiences and was at Longwood University in Virginia. And that was the first college job I took. And that would have been in 2007. So it would have been like summer of 2007 that I went to Longwood. And then went to University of Ozarks, which was Division III. Then went to East Central College, which was a community college in south of St. Louis. About 40 minutes, and was there for about 4 years. And then went from there to Northern Kentucky University. And that would have been 2016. After that, then I came to Tennessee. And that was when I became the director of coaching at Clarksville Soccer Club, which would have been like around February 2017. And then ever since. And then I took the position at Columbia State in the summer of 21. So just finished my there. So I'm still in my role as executive director and director of coaching at Clarksville and then head women's soccer coach at Columbia State. So that was a quick zoom through 20 years.
I have to say, following your women's team since I've met you, they've been very successful over the years. So you either recruit really well or you're a really great coach.
Or I just get lucky. You know, it could be that too.
I don't think there's luck when it comes to a certain level of play. Now, I'm going to ask you a question because since you are a community college coach, I don't know if it's considered a JUCO level. I don't understand that whole hierarchy yet because I've not got there with my kids. But do you think the changing of, or has it changed yet, where the if you go to a junior college of some sorts, those years don't apply to your 4 years school? How has that changed recruiting and how has that helped recruiting or will help recruiting?
As far as I am aware, it has not been blanketed across yet where any of the girls that I bring in can play 2 years and then still have 4 years to play NCAA. Now, I know there was the case of the Vanderbilt football player and that there everyone's talking about how that will change things, but certainly that has not been the case now for me where like girls can come play for me for 2 years and then still have 4 years. Now, if that does happen, it will change things, I'm sure. I think the people who would probably be impacted the most would be high school seniors in terms of their recruitment, because I can imagine that most four-year schools would look at taking, you know, athletes that have been in school for 2 years that are 20, 21 years old and then take them as a freshman just from like a maturation standpoint. You're probably going to be more likely to take a player that's 20 that has a lot of college minutes as opposed to like a 17-year-old that wouldn't have seen those experiences. In my opinion, I think the people who will be like impacted the most would be high school seniors.
I read a lot about it on posts and media, and I honestly don't know much about it because everyone who I talk to, their kids are going straight off to four-year school. They aren't going to a junior college. We have a lot of them here in Dallas that are very successful and produce a lot of great talent. And I'm thinking if they can go off to a four-year school and have four more years of play before they have a chance to go pro, they might actually have a better chance to have a longer career, or if they choose to go play professionally. But if they don't choose, it just allows them to do what they love for a few more years before they have to hang up their boots as a collegiate player. Yeah. With that being said, how has the college world and the junior college level been? I honestly just follow your college just because you're my friend. I consider you my friend, and I don't follow too many. There's a few here I do follow because I know the coaches, but I don't follow. So how do you view the junior college role and players being transferred to the four-year school? And how do you help players understand the role that you might have at your level of playing? Because I think there's a huge help there for kids to go play at a junior college and have a chance to go play at a four-year school.
Yeah, I think from what does it look like for me coaching at community college, junior college, we got to not only do we recruit them in, but we also have to recruit them out. So from a workload perspective, it's certainly more work. We want our kids to have those opportunities to go play after they're finished. I want to say I work just as hard trying to find the right situations, environments, coaches, programs for our, you know, kids to continue on playing. I think that's an interesting component in terms of we recruit them in and then we also recruit them out. So I think that, again, that adds a little bit to the workload. But from a standpoint of going to a two-year school or a four-year school or typically the landscape of NCAA, so you've got Division I, Division II, Division III, then you have NAIA, and then you have NJCAA for junior colleges. And then even within the NJCAA, you've got Division I, Division II, Division III. So there's a lot of different opportunities to play. And I think really, when you think about it, it's really more about like the experience, the connection, the environment, the coach, the program, all of those things, as opposed to what the sticker is on what school you're playing at. I think it's easy for us to get caught up in maybe potentially, don't want to say the ego driven, but where like what other people would perceive of us based on the sticker of what school we go to. Because I think whether it's like your parents can brag to all of their friends that their kid's playing at a Division I school, or they're, let me rephrase it, that they're on the roster of a Division I school, versus they may, maybe they're not bragging to their friends if their kids are on a Division III school or an NAI school or a junior college school. So I think if that's a driving factor, it's certainly going to influence like how you perceive programs, again, at different, under different organizations, under different governing bodies, and what that is. But realistically, for me, right, because it's the same thing for me, like I coach at a community college. How do I feel about that? Is, do I want to brag to everyone that I coach at a community college? Or what would be my incentive, my motive to move to a Division I school? Would it be so that I could say, oh, I feel validated because now I coach at a Division I school? Ultimately, I just love to coach. I like the connections. I like the relationships. Whether I'm coaching at the number one Division I school in the country or a community Division III community college, I love having the connections and the relationships with players and helping them to grow, mature, and evolve both as people and as players. Game days and trainings and preparation and individual analysis and game analysis, it's the same game. I might have fewer resources to try to apply some of those philosophies, but at the end of the day, it's, we're teaching, we're coaching, we're connecting. So for me, I think if you're at an environment where you feel a good connection, you feel valued, those are the things really that are going to be what motivates you to want to go to work every day, whether that's as a player or as a coach.
I think you touched on a few things. Me as a parent, I find to be important. I like that you said you love to coach and you love to develop. It's not, and meant more of along the lines of, when you're at the age where they're adults and you're mentoring them into life through soccer. And I think there are things that are parents miss. I talking to a lot of coaches, even at the club level, most of them, I don't think, realize the impact they have on players and how they view the game and how they view life. And they eat, live, and breathe and die what their coach says of them. And I'm talking more U13 and younger, but it still happens from U13 to U18 and U18 until they're done playing as a professional or college. And I think what you described yourself as is a huge part of our culture that's missing. People like to coach, but they forget the human element. And that was the big thing that I caught what you were saying, is that you coach the human element, not just X's and O's. With that being said, how do you look at, you talked about recruiting them in, and you also look at recruiting them out. Do you have a network of coaches that you have, or are you affiliated with a four-year college that will take players as sophomores, or I guess they'll be juniors coming in into their program? Or do you have ways to help these players learn to adjust if they don't make that jump, or they don't want to make that jump after experiencing it for 2 years?
I like to think, because of like the gambit of experiences I had from the East Coast to the South to the Midwest, and then even as a young coach, I did the camp cycle, and I would fill up my summers with working camps from New Mexico to Michigan State to Old Dominion. I think those experiences build your network as well. And it's a huge recommendation I have for young coaches to fill your time with working ID camps and residential camps and high school camps. Obviously, you get to wear your college gear if you're a college coach, and you can have an opportunity to speak about your program. Even greater than that is building the network of coaches, and you build the group of friends that you have as peers that you can bounce ideas off later, and then ultimately serve as potential avenues for me. Now I have a pretty vast network of coaches that obviously my friends are the first ones that I want to text and call about girls that we have, that, hey, here's a kid you should take a look at. I think we're fortunate at my current school that we live stream for free all of our home games. So I can text that link to coaches and say, hey, you can look at number five, who's going to be playing this position. And she might be a good someone for you to take a look at. And when it's still at that level, I can still get the feedback from my friends that are like, maybe not quite what we're looking for, missing XYZ. And then those are conversations that I can have with that player. Let's close the gap on some of these missing pieces that you might have in your game. So yeah, certainly I want to go through the network of coaches that I know. And then I've done all the other things to build. I've gone through all the US coaching license courses, and I went through the coach educator course and teach some of the license courses. So again, that continues to build a network of people that I feel like I can reach out to get feedback on players and help open up those opportunities for players. And then of course, finding a school really is more about that individual too. So I like to, what is this kid into? What do they like to do? Are they an outdoors person? Or are they a big city person? All the types of things that I think also need to be included in when you're looking for your school, that you end up not just at a school that's got a sticker that your parents can brag to their friends about, but is potentially in a geographic location that they're going to do really well in. And comes to mind is I had a guy play for me when I was coaching at East Central College. It was a community college on the men's side. And he's big outdoor guy, loves to fish, loves to golf. And we found a program for him in Michigan that he loved. And I remember him specifically calling me to be like, This is just the perfect spot for me. So it was like, it wasn't just about the soccer. It was more about like all the other things that fit his personality just as much as the soccer did too. So I think that's a big piece for me is as we get to learn these kids and we get to create a bond over time, feel like we have a good idea of who that person is. And I want to make sure that we set them up to be somewhere that they're going to enjoy beyond just the soccer piece, but all the other things as well. So yeah, I think all the networking and then also learning about that person is really important.
So because you have such a short time with all these players, most coaches have 4-year school, have 4 years, and you literally have 4 seasons. Most of these college coaches get 8 seasons with them. And now you're breaking yours down to 4, and you're constantly rebuilding and constantly passing off these players, I'll put it that way, to the next phase of their life. How do you view it as a coach? I know you talked about it on your podcast that I can only imagine it being a struggle, that you talk about how it's always a rebuilding year and that you can never let yourself get complacent, I guess might be the best way of putting it. But for you, coming from the community college level, do you see scholarships coming in, or is it just because they are local players coming from the local community? I know that community colleges are not as expensive as a 4-year school. I haven't been in community college in almost 20 years. And I know that it wasn't much then compared to a 4-year school. Do you find a lot of players gravitate towards that option because of financial? And so parents understand where they might get the benefit of a 2-year school before jumping to a 4-year college.
Yeah, I think financially it gives you such an advantage. I know here in Tennessee, we have the Tennessee Promise and the Tennessee Hope, where any Tennessee kids from a public school can essentially come for free. Their school is paid for 2 years. And just the way that things are now, I feel like when I was a kid, it was like, you just have to go to college. But now it's like, if you're going to college, you got to get a master's. And then it's like, all right, who's getting their EDD or who's getting their doctorate, and or they're going into trade school, because now everything has just looked so different. So either one of those paths for us financially is probably the best, most economical, most efficient way, right? You can go to one of the trade schools at a community college, and or you can get your associate's degree to transfer to a 4-year school for no cost. And then I had that same advantage when I was in Missouri. They had what was called the A+ program, which I'm sure they still have that. But it was a very similar thing where it was like kids in Missouri who hit a certain GPA, who had a certain attendance percentage and so many community service hours could go to a community college for free. So again, it's 2 years for free. So it's hard to pass what that looks like. 0 hours for a 3-hour class as opposed to 325 per credit hour. I think financially, it's a much more efficient, an effective way. I think we're seeing that just college in general, with people saying, I've got $80,000 of student loan that I've got to pay off for the next 15 years of my life. And it's, you can minimize that. I think you can, maybe you can get that boat a little bit sooner. You can get that boat before retirement.
All right, a quick break. This one's for my fellow grassroots coaches. We all know how tough it is to keep every kid engaged and still running a great session when time is tight. That's why I'm excited to partner with Soccer Coach Weekly. Since 2006, they've helped over 50,000 coaches, parents, teachers from all over the world. And here's the best part. As a Chat by the Pitch listener, you can get 50% off a full year of premium access. Just click the link in the show notes and apply the code EN50. And again, that's EN50 for 50% off. Plan fast, coach smart, Soccer Coach Week.
As you have gone through this journey with these players, how many of them do you see going from the community college level, the junior college level, to a four-year school that want to go? Do majority of the players get a chance to actually go continue on with their soccer journey if they so choose?
Yeah, I think that was the other piece I didn't really answer. But like you said, how difficult it is. I think it's very difficult. You start to build. A lot of times that freshman year is hard because they're nervous, they're scared, they're afraid a little bit. And so it's hard to build that connection that first year. So then it's like by the time they're sophomores now and they're like, all right, I'm not a deer in headlights that doesn't know how to cook or clean, or I'm away from my parents and making more responsible decisions of my own bedtime and stuff like that. And then you start to build a relationship. And then it's like, all right, bye, see you later. So I think that part from like an interpersonal perspective is difficult because you kind of start to feel like you build a connection with somebody and then they leave. It always makes my day when I get a phone call from somebody who played for me a year ago or 2 years ago or 10 years ago or 12 years ago. Always is a highlight of the day when you hear from a former player just to chit chat, not for anything, but just to catch up. So I think that's hard. But then in terms of the players moving on, I feel like the players who are motivated and driven to move on don't have problems in terms of options. And I think there are some players that experience 2 years of soccer and maybe they are ready to be like, you know what, I would rather experience the social side of a college where I don't have this responsibility to 27 other people that I have to make mature decisions. And you do have to make sacrifices to be a college athlete at whatever level you're making sacrifices to be a college athlete. Like your peers may be sleeping in because they don't have class that day. And so they're sleeping until 10 or 11 and you've got lifting at 6 a.m. There's certainly sacrifices you make to be a college athlete at regardless of the level in terms of NCAA 1-2-3 NAIA junior college. But, and then there are players that have decided that maybe they don't want to have to do those things. And that's okay too. And then they can still have a 2 years of a good experience of, hopefully, a good experience of being on a competitive collegiate team, but they come to the conclusion that they don't want to do that for another 2 years. I think that's okay too. And then they can kind of transition out of sport.
I don't know how to digest that as a parent. It's hard. It's a lot going on. And I don't know how you do it because you're saying goodbye every year to half a team or a good portion of your squad, depending on what the recruitment was the prior year. So as you now, I'm going to transition here a little bit to our connection, which is your podcast. I want to get the word out there and make people listen to it because I truly appreciated it. And one of my favorite stories I share all the time is something I struggle with as a parent. It's not bringing my kids cleats for them or making sure they have them or have the pair that they want. I should rephrase that because he always has a pair in the bottom of his bag. It's the kid that brought two left-footed cleats. He brought his brother's left-foot cleat. And the coach said, just let him play. And that's one of my favorite episodes because me as a parent, I struggle with that, making sure that I'm not hovering over my kids, making sure that they're going to be successful as future people. And that was a big one. And it still bothers me that I'm not able to fully make sure my kids can have all their stuff there. If they forget their shin guards, I'm sorry, you can sit the bench. That's one of the few things. Your cleats sit in the garage because they stink. I'll make sure they're put out where you have to step over them. But other than that, your podcast was my inspiration. I said that in the very beginning of this. And I know that we've talked back and forth over time that you have some in the deck somewhere. And I've always wanted you to start it back up because I like listening to yours more than others. And I like it more than mine. But the stories you share, the people you've interviewed, what has been your favorite part of your podcast? And give yourself a little shout out here while you can.
Favorite part? Honestly, it's just the conversations. Like I said before, it's like, I just love having the connections with people, like whether they're current players, past players, former coaches, former teammates, any kind of people that I've had some type of interaction with. And when I'm lucky, it's people that maybe I didn't know before that I was fortunate enough to come into contact with and either have as a guest on the show or who have in some way influenced me and the way that I see the game. Like I'm just a huge fan of that. I think, sadly, I think it's sad because I think we have to be careful about it. It's like almost a part of my identity is tied to the game. And that is also like a dangerous road to be on too, because you don't really want that to be the case. I think I'd be lying if I didn't say that like part of my identity is just pretty tightly intertwined with just the game of soccer. So that's probably not healthy, but it's a reality.
I understand. This is something I have learned as a parent trying to teach my kids that they are more than whatever activity they're doing, because doing my podcast, I feel like part of my identity is with my podcast, because I am in a never ending process of learning and growing as an individual. And I love sharing that information. I like to share what I learned. That's the whole reason I started mine, was to share what I'm learning, because I couldn't just be selfish. I wanted to take people with my journey. And yeah, I get what you're saying. Like, your identity becomes part of the game. And as a parent, you talk about it like it's who you are. But like, I tell my son every day, if I took away soccer from you today, who would you be? And he's 11. And he goes, I'm Lennon the student right now. He goes, that's what my main priority is. I'm like, okay, we're getting somewhere. You're not just Lennon the soccer player. Because that was the one thing, listening to your podcast or listening to players I've interviewed or other player episodes of other podcasts, when people got injured, players got injured, they lost who they were. And it was a dark time for many players because they've only known the game. So thank you for making the point about that, even as a coach and as a parent. And I think,
yeah, no, I'm very appreciative, Ian, that you didn't ask me that question, because I might have had a breakdown and been like, I have no idea who I am if you take the game away.
I would be lost as a parent if my kids stopped playing. Because everything I've done has evolved around soccer. So I get it. I get what you're saying. So as you've gone through your podcast, so you've had, I'm trying to think, I can't even tell you how many episodes, because I've listened to them, like they just all become one for me now. So as you've done, what has been your favorite thing that you've learned, or something that you would like to share with others that you didn't know before, or maybe just changed your view on something slightly so you had a better appreciation for something within the game?
So many incredible guests. I don't think it was less to do about me and more about everybody else that I had on, but I had some really incredible guests on there. I think a couple of the things that really stick out, a couple of different guests. One, I think, I won't name the specific episode, but one was about like overcoming adversity, just because in sport, it's an inevitability that you're going to face adversity. And really it's less about you failing and more about how you react to that and what do you do, because you're always going to fail. I think failure shouldn't even be a word that you feel uncomfortable hearing or exhibiting, but really more about what do you do after that. I think that was one of the really big lessons that I thought was good in one of the episodes. I think one of the other ones that resonated with me was the just everyone being such an integral part of building a culture, that it's not just the leader, it's not just the high performing players that impact the culture, but like everyone's role within a team and how they play a part in developing and evolving a culture. I think that really resonates with me too, because I think oftentimes we look at, oh, just this culture is so good because whatever, this coach is there, they've facilitated such a good culture, they had this one captain that was really great. And I think how important it is that every single individual involved in a team and an organization are like, piece of them don't buy into the culture and work against it, it all falls apart. So really, like, how important every individual's role is pushing, evolving, and maintaining the culture that they all want to have.
Yes. I mean, you made me think of something, and it goes back, and I don't want to jump back to your coaching, but one of the things I have been very much harping on lately is culture. When you talk about culture, how do you view culture then, coming from, you have it on both sides, you have the academy side, you have the collegiate side. How do you view culture then? And I'm sorry for everyone that I'm jumping back to a tangent here, but this is something that I right now I'm learning a lot about, is culture. And how do you view the two cultures like colliding? Because I've learned, everyone tells me you can't have the same culture you have at a collegiate level as you do academy. And I'm like, why not? I get you can't have everything the same, but there's a lot of similarities that you can ingrain into the system. Or am I completely way off base? Because you're the few, sorry for interrupting, you're one of the few coaches I can actually ask this to, because you're involved in both.
Yeah, I think the players are the same in terms of, and when I say players, I guess I should say the invested parties are really the same, right? It's like you have your staff and you have your athletes, you have your support staff, you have your families. And I think all of those play a pretty big role on both sides. I think it's a little bit different from club and college from a family side, because if you think about it, your parents are typically at every practice and they're at every game and they're all potentially influencing what that sideline culture is, like, almost more directly than it is at the college game, where they might be in the stands, but they're also surrounded by like students and faculty and staff and people who are differently invested, rather than like at a club where it's like the parents are just in one line. Typically, that's going to be the only people there. And if one person's upset with something that a coach did, or a lineup, or a tactical approach to that particular game, they voice their opinions. And one of the statements that, you know, I took from Mick McCarthy when he was there, which could not ring any truer, is dissension loves company. So anytime you have, and speaking of the negative culture piece, it's like when you have that dissension, it's so contagious. And that can happen with your parents. And then again, the way that the family influence on a club player versus a college player is, then that club player gets in the car with their parent and they may have a 2-hour drive home where everything that's coming out of their mouth is just negative. This player shouldn't have played. The coach shouldn't have done this. Why didn't they sub here? So like that influence is way more powerful than potentially what that parent may have on a college athlete, because maybe they weren't at the game. Maybe the game wasn't live streamed. That athlete rode back with the team and that their perception was like, hey, we had this great win. Kane only played 15 minutes, but we won a conference game. It was a huge conference game. It put us top of the table. The vibe and attitude on the team boss is probably way different than you went to a club game, you had a state cup game, and you only played so many minutes, and you got in the car with your parents that complained about driving all the way out there, and you only played so many minutes. So I think the familial influence has a different impact. They're still there, right? Because the kids are still, even in college, they're still calling their parents and probably venting their complaints. And how those parents respond to those phone calls, that's where the split is. So are they going to be like, you're upset with your playing sessions? How's your attitude in training? Do they put it back onto the player, or do they validate that player's excuse of, yeah, you're right, you should have played. I can't believe this player played over you. So they have that decision. Same decision of for the club, because, you know, what conversations you drive in the car and the ride home when you get home that night, those are going to be incredibly impactful for the players in that sense as well. So what are you building? If you think about a character trait that you want to build in your son or daughter, are you building like accountability, or are you destructing accountability? So it's what character traits are you building in those teaching moments as a parent? Because on both sides, they influence. And then I also think from a coaching perspective, it's a little bit different from club to college as well. College is way more result driven than a club is. Just in my time as a club director, I've never fired a coach because they only won 8 games in a season. That's never going to be like a determining factor on whether we retain a coach or not. Whereas in on the college side, that's going to be like the main factor when you meet with your athletic director administrator of, hey, you only won this many conference games. What's going on? Those are going to be the problems. So I think the coaches are motivated differently as well. So that I think is a contributing factor to the environment. I'm not saying it should be, but it probably is a determining factor in the coach's role in constructing what kind of environment they have.
No, that works. I'm just sitting here taking my notes and thinking about this because I feel you have never been to Texas for youth soccer. I think you hit on a lot of great points, and I don't want to keep on shifting gears, but you touched on it and made me really think hard about it because it's a topic that's near and dear to my heart right now. And my learning is culture, and the people I've been talking to a lot lately, it's been changing my perspective as a parent. You made some comment about the ride home. We normally don't critique other kids in the car, barely. It is, my son knows he did not play well because I didn't say you did a good job. I only say, I love you, son. After every game, I give him a hug and say, I love you and I'm proud of you. But if you don't get the good job in it, he knows that he did not play well. But I always make sure he's known that he's loved after every game. And that's something that someone told me I need to make sure that he knows. No matter how well he performs, it's the same message consistently, that you're loved and I'm proud of you. But if he doesn't hear you did a great job because he's finally figured it out, I didn't say it one time. He goes, you didn't say I did a great job. I go, because you didn't deserve that praise, because in my eyes, you did not do a good job. You did not put the effort in. You were not the same kid we saw last weekend. You were somewhere else. And I go, you have to play consistent. I love you, and I'm proud of that you're trying, but you did not do a great job. I'm sorry, bud. But he's 11. He can start having those real conversations. And my 7-year-old daughter, I do the same thing with her now. I love you. I'm proud of you. And if she did a great job, I'll tell her, or I'll tell her what she did well, and I'll leave it there. And because she's 7. But it's teaching them, like you said, accountability. And I don't think we get enough of that in our culture anymore. I am looking at our time. I'm going to get to my last favorite question.
No, you're good. But if you don't mind, I'll jump in on just on what you just talked about. Obviously, like now my kids, all 3 of my kids play now, and I completely remove any soccer coach hat when I interact with them. It's like after the game again, I'm like, I usually say, did you have fun? And then if they say yes, I'm like, that's great. And then that's pretty much the only question I ask. And if they ask me, how did I play? Typically, I'll say, what did your coach say? And I'll put it on them because I don't want to ever have them feel like I'm there in a capacity that's judging what they did in soccer. So I'm always going to say, what did your coach say? And they're like, they didn't say anything. Did you ask them? And it's no. It's like, all right, well, if you want to know, you should ask your coach.
I like that approach. My problem is I do data analytics for a living and everything's a data point. It doesn't matter if it's my kid. When I coached him at a young age, he was jersey 118. He's now 18. He was 12, whatever his jersey number. He was just a data point. And that's how I viewed him. It took the emotions out of it as a coach. It takes the emotions out of it as a parent. And your pass completion factor was less than 50%. What do you want me to say?
How would you grade that?
He learns. And I always tell him, if you want feedback, ask. I'll give it to you. But I'm not going to give it unless you specifically ask. And sometimes I'll go down. My big thing is I interviewed a coach here, and his big thing was, quote, I give him the credit, Matt Montaigne. If you haven't listened to his episode, go listen to it. Everyone listening, I'll promote him. He gave me the quote, if your attitude affects your emotions, your attitude affects your emotions, affect your attitude. Your attitude affects your results. There we go. And so if I yell ear to my son, that means his emotions are getting out of control. That's all he needs to know. It's going to affect your results. Get your emotions in check. I don't have to say, Landon, calm down. I'll just say ear.
Yeah.
And he knows what it means. And it's not trying to embarrass him. It's not trying to do anything. It's just my wife gives me a hard time because you have all these little words that you say to him. Why? And I go, because I don't want him to be embarrassed. And if he hears the word, he knows exactly what it means. It's not a sentence. It's not 3 words. It's 1 word.
Yeah. That's great. It's better than a 4-letter word you could be saying to him.
Yes. 3-letter word. But those are the things. Like as a parent, I have learned, I am trying very hard not to be buddy, you need to touch the soccer ball today. He was over spring break. I tried to encourage it a little bit and nudge him, but I did not say, it's you need to go play it, because he has to find that love, and me forcing it will never make him love it. And you listen to all these stories about players that are parents that are hounding them, and by the time they're 18, they're done playing. I don't want him ever to quit playing soccer. I want him to be like my former boss that was playing up until he was 61, and COVID happened, and then he couldn't play anymore. And so he picked up golf instead. But that was the thing. It was, I want Landon to play forever. I want Thea to love playing the game forever. And as a parent, that's something I have to learn, not to be so harping on them. But I also have to make sure when they ask me to play in the hallway, to go play with them. I say no a lot lately. But I'm going to give you my favorite question, and I'll wrap it up then. My favorite question is, who has been the greatest influence on you as a player? And now, and since you coach also, who has been the greatest influence on you as a coach?
I would say the coach who probably was the greatest influence was Bill Moore, who was like my first rec soccer coach when I was like 6, 8 years old. He came to all my high school games after I was done. He came and watched some of my college games when I was playing in college. He came and watched some of the games that I was coaching when I was coaching in college. Like, he would travel to Illinois to watch some of the games. Like, he came to my birthday parties when I was young. He was a huge influence on just me as a human. So he would probably be the one who influenced me the most as a coach. And then the other part was, who is a player that influenced me the most? Was that it? Like a player whom I played with, player whom I coached?
You as a player, growing up and playing. Because you have the influence as a coach that influences you. And then you, like, that helps you mentoring you as a coach. And then you have someone that it's always there. Most people I've had answers from themselves to their parents to other players that help motivate them and push them to the next level. It's amazing the answers you get from this.
Yeah. A player who influenced me the most, maybe my brother, I would say, obviously.
Not a player, but as a player. Let me rephrase that. As a player who influenced you the most. And
like when I was playing?
When you were playing, yes.
Yeah, I would say my brother.
Brother, okay.
Yeah.
Make sure I have it said it right.
Yeah, I would say my brother. I started playing because he played. And when we played together just as kids, and then we got to play together in high school. And then obviously I watched him play in college before I did. And I think just as a player, he influenced me pretty greatly. He was very non-emotional. Like, he was able to always stay pretty flatlined, whether it was like ups or downs. And I thought that was like such a tremendous attribute as a player to have. So I think I learned a lot from that, because I was probably more of a unstable emotional player when I played. So I think he probably taught me more than he knew in terms of being able to stay like level emotionally in games, whether they were big moments or small moments. So I think he probably influenced me. And then just like his discipline and all the things that he did to be the player that he was. And he also overcame a lot of adversity. Tore his ACL, his left ACL his sophomore year in high school. He tore his right ACL his sophomore year in college, and came back from both of those injuries and was still an influential player on the teams that he was a part of. So he didn't really let any of that stop what the influence that he had on his teammates. I thought I would say him.
Hey everyone, I hope you all have enjoyed this week's episode of Chat by the Pitch. This week I had Keen, and to me this is not just a friend, it's a mentor, someone I actually truly look up to as a parent when I was coaching a coach, and as a podcaster, someone I truly look up to. If you listen to his podcast, you'll see a lot of similarities. The formatting's very similar. That being said, what he talked about in this episode is so important. The advice he gives, the information he shared about coaching and the future of soccer is great to listen to. I'm not going to say much more than that, because I think he covered it really well. Hey everyone, if you guys have enjoyed this podcast, have enjoyed what I've been trying to do, the messages that I'm putting out there, please give me some ratings, some stars on all the podcast sites that you listen to this on.
give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.